Want to know the hidden meaning behind what women say and do? Then check out The Chictionary. It's the Wing Girl Method's manual that gives you a full rundown of all the things women say that confuse men, written in dictionary format. Go get a copy of The Chictionary by going to winggirlmethod.com/chick. That's winggirlmethod.com/chick. Coming up on this week's episode of the Ask Women podcast, we are going to dive into some very fun topics. We're going to dive into the term monogamish and what it means and how you could possibly open up a woman's mind to being monogamish or even open up your own mind. Plus, we're going to talk about how to bring a third party into a relationship that you're having or how you can be open to being a third party in somebody else's relationship. We got a lot that we covered during this episode. It was a very fun episode. Kristen was uncomfortable for 85% of the time, which is hilarious to me, and you are going to enjoy listening to it. So keep listening. Hey, and welcome back to another episode of the Ask Women podcast. I am one of your hosts, Kristen Carney from KristenandChill.com. And of course, Marnie Kinnerst is with me, my co-host, the ever-loved, amazing dating coach. Everyone talks about you. I was talking to a guy last night and he knew of you.
Really?
He was like, oh, Marnie's like the leader. She's the girl, the go-to in the dating stuff.
That feels really nice.
Yeah.
I got recognized twice at the airport last time I went to Chicago. It was very uncomfortable.
Really?
Talking about discomfort, wow, which we were talking about before the show. Very uncomfortable. I was with my son. I was proud and so uncomfortable at the same time. I was like, I could not imagine being a real famous person because this is horrific. If you had this every second, it would be absolutely horrible. But I loved it at the same time.
I would walk around with headshots, yeah, and a marker and yeah, be ready to go. Like, but anyway, it's Marnie Kinnerst from WingGirlMethod.com. And today we have two amazing guests who have a company called Max Dashwell Coaching. So Maxwell Coaching. And they're going to talk to us today about adding a third to your second thing, whatever you'd call
yeah
it. Your coupling
yeah
will become a thirding. And so Zach and Sally, thanks for joining us. And we're kind of excited to talk about this. Marnie is. I'm not. But welcome to
I'm
the show.
I'm super excited. Kristen is going to have earmuffs on the entire time that we're having this podcast. But welcome, guys. And thanks for talking to us about this.
We're so happy to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. So let's take a step back for 1 second, because before we started the show, you guys mentioned a term that I've been hearing a lot lately. I actually had this woman, Dr. Tara, over at my house a couple of weeks ago. We were doing a YouTube video together, and she goes, oh, I'm monogamish with my husband. And I was like, what the heck is that? That's such an interesting term. And she goes, well, sometimes we bring people into our relationship. We go to these sex parties. We do X, Y, and Z, blah, 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 blah. You know, my husband was going down on me at a sex party in front of Vince Vaughn. That was the end of the story, pretty much. It was crazy. So,
whoa.
I know. So,
Vince Vaughn is.
There you go. See, you heard it first.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll
start
go
going
to a third if he's part of the couple.
Exactly.
And I actually thought you, I thought you guys had a lisp when you were saying monogamish. I just assumed you were saying it wrong, not on purpose. So it's actually monogamish.
Ish. Like I'm ish.
That's a cool term.
Like I kind of venture
yeah
out, but maybe you guys can share the origin of this term and maybe like the definition for others. I want people to hear what's becoming mainstream and what the options are that are available to them when they get into a relationship, that it doesn't have to be like cut and dry. I'm with this person for the rest of my life and only this person.
Yeah. So we can all thank Dan Savage for coining the term monogamish. And the way that I understand it is that it's not monogamy. So it's close to monogamy. It's, you know, it's kind of like you're vegan-ish. You know, you eat mostly vegan, but sometimes you
eat
meat at a restaurant, eat Cheers, or you eat cheese, or you eat a burger or whatever. So it's, you're not 100% adhering to this structure of monogamy. There's openness that's available.
And when does it not become ish? What's like the cap on ish? What is it?
I think that's each person's own definition of what that is. There's so many different terminologies for things that are not monogamous. There's swingers, there's polyamorous, and it can really get confusing. And what I love about what Dan Savage did with this terminology is he allowed the general population who relate to themselves as monogamous, singular, to expand the borders of their sexual contract in whatever way they see fit.
Okay.
So monogamish could look like my husband likes to flirt with other people at bars.
Mm.
It could be that benign seeming. Or it could be your example.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So I think it just gives modern day couples the freedom and opportunity to have more agency in how they want to design their sexual contract. And that's what we do as coaches, is part of what we do as coaches is sometimes couples will come to us with different sexual appetites or different sexual needs. And part of the work that we do is help them really get grounded in what their truth is around their sexual needs and how they want to design their own individual sexual contract according to the unique people that they are.
Yeah. For the guys that are listening, like how would somebody even begin to bring this up to a woman that they're dating, right? That this is something that they may desire or they're curious about. And if they were to bring this up, and like, let's say, for example, in casual conversation, even if the term monogamish comes up and the guy says, oh, you know, that could be interesting to be monogamish. And the woman like shuts it down right away. And then he's scared off from ever bringing it up again. Like, what is the guidance that you would give to a man who does want to explore these options, even if he doesn't really know what he wants, but wants to explore these options with a woman without having her feel insecure or not enough?
I think relating to the idea of strict monogamy, like in the examples that you used, Marnie, of he's casually dating somebody and he mentions that he might want to explore that someday and she strikes it down as, you know, never ever, and I think that relating to that, like that's actually a deal breaker, that lack of, and that might be a deal breaker for her as well. But if she's a hard no, then that hard no needs to get discussed at that juncture. So maybe not in that exact conversation, but hey, you know, this, like finances, like do you want to have kids one day? Your sexual contracts, the openness that you feel to being a living, breathing thing that changes over time rather than you're in this fixed structure, that has to be addressed, honestly. And both people have to relate to it as that it's either a deal breaker or it's not. So if it is, like, I need strict monogamy. And so if you ever wanted to open things up, that wouldn't work for me. Like, I need to have children. And if you aren't sure that you want to have kids, that's a deal breaker. Your sexual contracts are deal breakers as well. That's why 75% of modern couples cheat.
I had this conversation with my ex, and I actually was more open than I expected myself to be.
Yeah.
Because he does do the menage, as I think it's like an old-fashioned term, menage a trois. I feel like I'm from like 1995 saying that or something. He is into that stuff, but he's not so married to it that he has to have it. And his previous girlfriend and, you know, other exes were open to it. And I said, I'm totally not open to it. Mm-hmm. I said, however, if we get married and things start to feel a little stale, I am willing to, you know,
experiment,
change, yeah, or open my mind or experiment. So I think I was a good example of someone that was rigid, and he didn't go in too deep of an explanation. I just knew, as the other person, not wanting to be selfish and thinking, could I handle this? If I really trusted his love, I think I could handle this.
Yeah.
And that's why I said, after we're married, if it starts to get stale, which if is a yes, because marriage, it will get stale at some point. It doesn't have to, but you know, we don't live in a utopia. So
no, as we talked about on our last podcast, it doesn't have to, but sometimes it does.
If it's with me, it'll get stale. Yeah. No.
That's a great, you should be dating for a
while. Yeah. So anyway, that's an example of someone going from really rigid to actually thinking about the other person and saying, no, this is within my bounds. So to make him happy, my bounds are stretchable to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a really good example. And I think rigidity around this area is, in my opinion, and in our coaching practice, we would say is just a generally a deal breaker. So if we were talking to a guy who was dating and looking for a partner, that kind of rigidity of like hard no, I would never, is something to look out for. Like that's a red flag for sure.
Well, let me dive deeper into that, because is it a red flag or is it literally just a person's discomfort because it's new for them, right? So in my head, the entire time while you guys were talking, I was thinking about this question. So this led into it perfectly. But how do you help somebody transition to be less rigid? And I'm going to take a step back for a second because I went on a retreat this weekend. It was a healing retreat. I didn't know it was a healing retreat before I went, but it was a healing retreat. But it was amazing and wonderful. And what I got out of it was that I realized how important like openness is to me and like a deeper connection, right? Vulnerability, expressing yourself, and really just like proximity to another individual, eye contact, touching, that type of closeness is what I'm talking about. I brought it up to my husband when I came home and talked really calmly about it and said, I realize how important this is to me and how that is lacking for me in our relationship right now because we have so many things going on. We've got our kids, we've got these obligations. You know, there isn't the 5 minutes a day where it's like literally looking into my eyes and mine looking into yours, holding me, whatever. Like that's missing a little bit. And we got into a conversation about how for him, it's not needed. He is happy to do anything that I need. He's just going to need more guidance on it, right? But I know that if I had said this 19 years ago with him, he would get angry, uncomfortable, and just sort of shoot it down because of that. Whereas now, he is more open to things. He's not saying he wants the same thing as me, but he's saying he will do, you know, whatever I want to do and try whatever, but he needs guidance, right? So my point being is that, is there a way to turn that initial rigidity into a softness where a conversation can actually happen with another person who's never had the thought in their mind that a partner of theirs would ever ask them to be monogamish? And they have all these built-in beliefs around what that means. Like how can you soften up that response a little bit or make them more comfortable with the idea?
Well, one of the beautiful things about your story, Marnie, that you just shared is that you gave reference of at the beginning of our relationship, it would have been different. Something happens over the course of a relationship where you learn to trust one another.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Right. In an ideal world, it really, you learn how to trust one another and you develop compersion, which is a term that means you're happy for your partner when you see them being happy. It brings me joy to see Zach doing things that he loves to do. So that develops over the course of a relationship, and it can also be fast-tracked in the beginning initial stages of a relationship by practicing radical honesty. Now, that doesn't come naturally to any of us.
Yeah. Like that's all that this was this weekend was like radical honesty.
Yeah.
And it's so void for so many of us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the soft landing, the soft place, the soft reception that you're asking about happens inside of a container of trust. And whether it takes years to build that trust or it takes a short amount of time where two people are very consciously practicing radical honesty and working on themselves, that's how you create that soft space to have this conversation.
So what does radical honesty look like? And let's say you have one person who practices radical honesty and the other person's like, I've never had a person be honest with me in their entire life. This is foreign and I hate. Like, mm-hmm. Paint the picture for me of what it looks like.
I think for us, what we mean by that is that there's no conversation that is off limits.
Yeah.
There's no conversation that can't be put on the table. Mm-hmm. And that it's massively important in a relationship for both people to be game to have any conversation, no matter how uncomfortable it is.
And no matter how much you don't think you can have that conversation because your partner is going to react in a certain way. We have so many excuses why we can't have a conversation. And often it's because our partner will XYZ. So it's being game. And it's also being game to... Well, actually not game. It's actually being intolerant of harboring a negative perception of your partner.
Mm-hmm.
So if I ever have negative talk about Zach, if I'm ever grumbling about him, I'm not allowed to just harbor that and let that accumulate over the years according to our value system and our relationship and according to what we teach our clients how to do.
Yeah.
And when you live in that kind of, and I think that is radical because most people live inside of their heads and then through the law of confirmation bias, prove that their partner's a dickhead or prove that their partner isn't open to having this conversation.
Oh, then you start living that. You're like, oh yeah, you are a dickhead. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm living that. So that's the definition of radical honesty, being honest about your thoughts and being game to have any conversation inside of the trust of your love for one another.
Okay. Well, can I take a crack at being radically honest about this topic? So last night I did a masterclass. We had Hannah Spanky come on. She's amazing. You guys should actually connect.
Is her last name really Spanky?
I think it is. And she used to be a sex worker. Now she's teaching. It's amazing.
It's
like the perfect name. She was born into this job, obviously. And she's amazing. But she was talking last night about the three things that men need to work on for themselves to be truly masculine. And oh God, what was it? It was like one was being present. One was your tonality. And the other one was like breath work or steadiness. I forget. But it was like all three together are the way to express yourself to women when you're in conversation with them. So if I'm going to take a crack at it, that's the place that I'm going to come from. I'm not going to be rattled by the other person's reaction, right? To the woman's reaction. I'm going to express myself from where I really want to speak from. So I would say to a woman, if she had said, hell no, we're never having an open relationship. That's not on the table for me. I would probably circle back once I processed it a little bit and I could be calm about it. And I would come back and I'd say, hey, I want to talk to you about, you know, our conversation from Tuesday night when we talked about, you know, possibly being open or experimenting with being open. And I understand that that's so, you know, off the table for you right now. It's not something you could even conceive, but it's something that's on my mind. And it doesn't mean anything about what you and I have together. It's just something I've always been very open to, and I'd like to explore it eventually. And just know that for us to have a partnership together, I need to know that you'll put some thought into this. Doesn't mean you'll turn around and want this, but just be open about the idea. Like something like that, would that be in line with...
Very, very, very close, except for the last thing that you said.
I know. I was questioning that one. I didn't know how to spin that around to say that this is what I need for a relationship.
It's just like I know that I want to have children someday. And if you don't...
That's okay.
That's okay, but this is not going to work. Or if you're not sure, we need to have more conversations about this to get to a real conclusion, like a real answer, like specific and measurable. Yes, I want to have kids and we're on the same page about that, or no, I don't, rather than maybe someday I don't really know. And so with this as well, the reason there's so much infidelity is because people don't feel like they can talk about this and they can really ask for what they need. Monogamy has become just the default setting.
Right. Because it means something if people don't want monogamy. That's what I think it is. It's like
it
programs in you, oh, I'm not enough, or I'm not sexy enough, or of course you want to fuck a whole bunch of other women. Like, so would it be also that after, you know, you're radically honest about this, you can say, but I do want to have a conversation about this. When you're ready for it, I will answer any questions you have. I'll answer them honestly. I'm going to be very direct with you because that's how I like to be. Like, I guess what I fear is that this gets said and then it gets left, right?
That's what will happen if you end the conversation like you ended it.
I know. Yeah. I felt that was wrong as soon as I was saying it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you actually want to be very specific in the deliverable, in the ask, so that you can metaphorically put something on the calendar to work towards together.
So like, can we talk about this in 2 weeks? I'll come back to you in 2 weeks. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think for your listeners, Marnie, I think one way that they can really start to get clear on where they stand in terms of this being a deal breaker or not and where they fall on the spectrum is to relate to a person's monogamousness, like their ability to be monogamous, similarly to their sexual orientation. Some people really are just more monogamous than other people. And it has to do with each one of our own individual needs for novelty and adventure in relationship to safety and security. Some people really don't need a lot of novelty and adventure, right? And some people need a lot of novelty and adventure. And one way that you can really understand where you fall on that spectrum is to take a look at your history. Have you cheated? So for your listeners, right? Have you cheated on many partners in the past? Have you been in love with people that you've dated, but after a certain period of time, really started to want something else sexually or emotionally or both? Have you only attracted people who've cheated on you? And getting really honest with yourself about the story that your history tells you about where you fall on this spectrum. If you've cheated on most of your partners from the past, likelihood is that you're not as monogamous as society might tell you you should be.
Okay. Those are really good prompts for these guys that are listening. I think that's good.
Yeah. And if you desire to be strictly monogamous, you can always look into your history and evolve parts. I don't even want to use the word evolve because that's assuming that there's something better. But you can reprogram the software programming that led you to cheat if you truly want to be 100% monogamous in the future.
Yeah.
Right.
So we have way more agency in this conversation than we give ourselves credit for.
Yeah. Well, even on the flip side, if a woman were to say that this is what she wanted and the guys who are listening may be like, no freaking way. Like, is my woman going to go out and do X, Y, and Z? Like, what would you point them towards as resources for them to become potentially more educated or more comfortable with the idea? Because like, that other person isn't going to fully educate them, right? Like, would you tell them to go read some articles? Would you tell them to read a book? Is that what they should do if they're trying to explore?
100%.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's education is your best friend here because we are all so conditioned by our culture, by our parents, by the narrative around love and monogamousness as intertwined, as contingent upon each other. It's just been so hardwired into the way we think about love that when you start to educate yourself on the history of monogamy, especially the history of monogamy for women, monogamy was never practiced by men, mostly. Monogamy was always enforced upon women so people could understand whose property was whose property and whose kids were whose kids. And men didn't practice monogamy. Men saved love and lust for their mistresses. And only really until recently did women stop practicing monogamy as much as men did in the sense of infidelity being the most common form of non-monogamy. So women cheat statistically almost as much as men.
I thought it was more. I thought that it was more.
Yeah, we talked about that once.
Yeah, on our show, that there's a higher percentage of women cheating than men.
So the BBC did a study, I think, in 2019, and it was, I think 7 out of 10 men and 4 out of 10 women, but that's not accurate because again, people lie.
Yeah, I was gonna say you don't know.
Exactly. No. So people lie about it. And it's also a lot more quote unquote shameful in the eyes of our culture for a woman to cheat than for a man, right? So it's not, but that's just the way that women are still branded if they cheat. So women are gonna be a lot less forthcoming about their indiscretions than men are.
Yeah, totally. Because I was never called to answer that poll. Not that I've cheated, but I'm just saying, like, it's like you don't really know where they're getting the information from.
Yeah.
But education is your best friend. Really starting to understand and start to untie some of these knots around this narrative of, oh my God, huh.
That's a possibility.
That doesn't line up with our cultural narrative, right? And love and monogamy doesn't generally work for 75% of marriages because people are cheating that much and maybe there is a different way. And that really helps loosen our stronghold of, oh, you would want to be non-monogamous because I'm not enough for you.
Right. Or like this, only these kind of people are monogamish, right? Because you just see these extremes of these people and they have to be like, again, an extreme in their activities. But as you said, Sally, in the beginning of the podcast, that could just mean that I'm allowed to go out and flirt and like sit on men's laps. And that could be my way of doing it.
Yep.
Yeah. I do want to take a quick break. And when we come back, I do want to talk to you guys, because this is something that you coach people on. is once you've decided that you want to be more open in your relationship, you coach them on how to actually go out and find a third. So, and this is interesting because, you know, my best-selling program is the F formula. I've never heard it being used for this scenario. And I want to hear like how you're doing this. So we'll be back right after this and from a word from our sponsors.
Every woman loves a guy with an accent, but sometimes we can't have one because we're from where she's from. So the next best thing is to speak another language entirely. And it's a lot easier than you think it is. You might think, oh, I don't have time. I've got other things to do. But you actually do have time. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. That's nothing. If you want to be that guy that's so different from all the other ones, learn a new language. It'll knock your socks off. I love saying that phrase. So here's a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/askwomen. Get 55% off at babbel.com/askwomen. It's spelled BABBEL.com/askwomen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
If you listen to the Ask Women podcast, then you are already miles and miles and miles ahead of other men when it comes to attracting and getting the girls you want. But I must confess, there's one missing piece in the puzzle, and that's flirting, or the ability to ignite sexual chemistry with any girl you meet in a matter of minutes. Most guys suck at flirting. They can't flirt their way out of a paper bag. But as your personal wing girl, I can't let you be one of those guys. That's why I want to show you the most effective step-by-step formulaic approach to flirting with any girl you like. This formulaic approach has been tested on thousands of girls and has been proven to work like magic. Yes, magic. You just apply the formula and see results instantly, and it's that powerful. To find out everything about this flirting formula, all you have to do is go to winggirlmethod.com/flirty. I've made a special video for you where I reveal what this formula is all about. Go to winggirlmethod/flirty and you'll find out all about it. All right, we are back. And Kristen, I want to hear your thoughts on all this before we dive into the next topic, but I want to hear what you're thinking so far. Because now are you totally open?
Oh, yeah. My legs are open right now as I'm recording this.
Yeah.
I'm reflecting back on my past relationships, but my most recent relationship. And what Sally was saying was wanting to see your partner happy. And that was really my motive in being more open-minded in terms of adding a third or doing something more out there, mm-hmm. because I knew it would make him happy. But at the same time, it didn't push against my boundaries, because what outweighed my quote unquote boundary would be wanting to see my partner happy.
Yeah.
And I think that comes with maturity. You know, I mean, Marnie and I have been doing this podcast for 12 years. And I mean, I may have matured like a year in 12 years, but
100%.
When we first started this podcast, it would have been a hard no, like completely. And now as I'm older and understanding life a little bit more, and as you get older, I do think if you're doing it right, you do become less selfish. Mm-hmm. And not that it's selfish to have your own boundaries, but to me, it's like being now an adult. I love giving gifts at Christmas. I don't really care what I get. Mm-hmm. And that changed from when I was a kid. So that's a way you can look at it.
Totally. Oh, I love that. I love that. First of all, so Kristen, when we first started, I remember this, when we had Ryan Keeley on our show.
She asked if I tasted my vagina. P-U-S-S-Y. No, she said the P word.
Well, I wasn't going to say it. I didn't want to spook you out. But Kristen was like, what did you just ask me? And I get,
why would I taste my...
She was like, we're not doing this show anymore. It's horrible. Oh, my God. No, but now statements like that don't shock you as much.
You know, that was my first look at anything sexual, really speaking. You know, we didn't grow up in that environment.
Yeah, Zach was talking about that education, being immersed in a topic, like normalizing it because you realize other people are talking about it, not in the obscene, obscure, like crazy way that you thought of in your head, and hearing it from a person who you like, who's just talking about something that you think is ridiculous or not in your wheelhouse, it becomes more normalized, right? So education, as you said before, is key.
Or just say Vince Vaughn.
Right, exactly. Then and then normalize it.
Like, oh, he does it?
Yeah, then I'm into it.
Okay, sure.
But yeah, so let's talk about like bringing a third in. How do you coach people to do that? Like, how do you, I can't even imagine. I have a lot of friends who have been propositioned quite often to be a third, but I'm just like, first of all, why has nobody ever asked me? I'm quite insulted that I haven't been picked up by a couple. And
I've been asked once.
See, why? This is like every time I bring this up, when I was younger, I used to go to Mexico. My friends and I would walk down the beach. They were offered Coke. I was offered bracelets. Like I was.
I never got offered drugs.
It was ridiculous.
We're even there.
Fine, there. But you got offered a threesome.
Coke, and you were offered what, Marnie?
Bracelets, a ring.
Right.
A hat.
I'm in the same boat. Yes. Why was I, no one's even really ever, I mean, maybe now at this point, but like no one's tried to sell me weed once in my life. Yeah. Not even weed, let alone Coke. But I was propositioned, and it was years before I met you. I was very young, and I was waiting tables, and I was waiting tables on this couple. And they didn't do any service to the whole menage a trois, monogamish thing, because they were, like, the guy was wearing, like, this cheesy Hawaiian shirt, and he was super cheesy. And the wife was really tacky, and they just looked weird.
Right.
And it just confirmed or reaffirmed my thoughts on, oh, if you do that, then you've got to be the guy with the wide open shirt that's got like, you know, he'd be listening to Jimmy Buffett or something. Right. I don't know. It's just this weird, or have a big mustache or something.
Yeah. So how did they, because this is actually the answer to your question, Marnie. How did they proposition you?
Oh, God, it was so long ago that I really totally can't remember. But they basically asked me when, well, they were kind of flirting with me the entire time I was waiting on them. So I knew something was up. He was and she was. Generally, if you're waiting tables, the woman will stare at you with dead eyes if her husband's flirting with you.
Yeah.
You know, they're not happy and you get a lower tip. In this case, it was much different. And so she was kind of flirty. He was flirty. They were fun. I don't know if they reached out and kind of touched my arm and da-da-da-da-da. And then at the end, they said something, like, again, I can't fully recall, but it was something about, what are you doing after your shift? We're looking to blank. I don't know if it was like shake things up or do something, you know, that we don't really, you know, tell other people about. It was something where it was like a code word for. And I just went, oh, that's not my thing, but I'm very flattered.
Right. So if you were waiting on a single guy, and he was flirting with you, and then he said, you know, what are you doing after your shift? Because I'm looking to have sex with you, basically. I'm looking to mix things up. That would be weird.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, depending on how I felt towards
him. Right, that's true.
If he asked you out on a date, it wouldn't be weird.
Right.
But if he propositioned you for sex.
Immediately,
did, like, hey, what are you doing after? Do you want to come have a threesome with us? Like, that's... That's fucking weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is weird. Okay. That is weird.
I came for tips, not for dicks.
Yeah.
Right.
Not those tips. Exactly.
Yeah.
So the same principle. So everything that you teach, Marnie, and for all of your listeners that follow everything that you teach, the same principles apply. 100%. So when you teach about when you go and approach a woman, your mindset, if you think that it's weird to go be approaching her, that you're creepy, then she's going to feel like it's weird and creepy. But if you have confidence in yourself and your frame and you go approach her because you want to and you know that there's nothing wrong with that and you're confident in that space, then she's going to feel that. Now, she might not want to go out with you.
Right.
But she's going to feel your confidence and she's not going to feel that you're uncomfortable with what you're doing. It's the exact same thing that we teach couples who are trying to bring, you know, a third into their relationship, either for a night or as a girlfriend, whether they're looking for a guy or a girl. It's if you think it's weird in your head, then it's going to be weird for whoever you're talking to. If you don't think that there's anything weird or abnormal about seeking a third and you're confident about that, then whoever you're speaking with is going to feel your level of confidence and self-assuredness about that. And they might not be game for that. They might not be interested.
Right.
But it's not going to be like a weird thing. So that's number one.
Okay.
Number two is everything that you teach about flirting. So what makes a woman want to go on a date with a guy, or what makes a woman want to, or a man want to hang with a couple. It's the same things that would make a single person want to hang with another single person. So a feeling of safety, a feeling of rapport, and a feeling of chemistry and attraction, which comes from flirting, everything that you teach.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's literally just, it's the same principles, just as a couple.
And then I guess it's really just up to that person, same as in one-on-one, if they're like, yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, I feel comfortable with you too. I would like to get to know you two better.
Yeah.
And what so many couples do is they treat the third like she's an object, like a hooker. Hey, you're there to satisfy our fantasy, right? Rather than you're a human being who has her own or has his own needs and desires and wants. And just like if we were two single people, I would need to be taking that into consideration, and that would need to profoundly matter.
The other person's dignity.
Well, let me ask you one question. What if there are people who just want to look at them as like a fantasy, right? And they don't want them to be a human being to them. They don't want to pull them into their circle. They want to have a fun experience. Is there anything?
Then hire a sex worker.
Or get ready for a lot of no's.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you're saying like at that point, it is a numbers game, right?
Yeah.
But it would start off the same way where you're together flirting with somebody. And then it could be just like this radical honesty that you talked about before, of saying, like, we think you're super sexy and we'd love to invite you back with us, right? So kind of what 100%. Was said to Kristen. And sometimes there's somebody who's going to be like, yeah, that sounds fun. And sometimes they're going to say, yeah, no, not for me. Okay.
But the difference is that the more you get to know somebody and the more rapport you have and the more safety you build with somebody, the more likely it is that you're going to get a yes. If you're just... if you're thinking of that person as an object that's there to fulfill your fantasy, you're really looking for someone that wants to be objectified in that way. And there are some people that want that, but the likelihood of finding that is pretty low.
Okay.
And if you really just want that, it would be better to hire a sex worker to fulfill that fantasy for you rather than treat another human being that way.
It would be less of a time investment too.
Yeah.
Right. Because that sounds like a huge investment. Yeah.
And it's so pertinent to just regular dating. You know, if you don't build a rapport, like the guys that I work with on online dating and banter and conversation, I try to emphasize, you can't just match with a girl and say, hey, do you want to go grab coffee this week or get a drink tomorrow? Because there has to be a rapport.
Exactly.
She has too many guys in her inbox to say yes to every single person that immediately just says hello to her and for her to give her time.
Exactly. It's even more so if you're a couple, it's more so.
Right, right. So in terms of approaching, I see a lot of men with their wives or girlfriends on dating sites saying, I'm in a relationship, very committed, but we're looking for X. So how do you see it working in person versus working on apps that are prone for just dating, not for, you know, that type of scenario?
Well, the apps are much more transactional because there is that profile. There is that advertisement of exactly
what you're looking for. Yeah.
What they're looking for, right? So it's a lot more transactional. And then the IRL dating is going to be more of Marnie's Wing Girl Method approach.
Right. So do you think one is more successful than the other, being in person versus being online?
Well, what's your definition of success?
Getting a lot of V that isn't yours.
Right. Well, I guess it just depends on what your intentions are, right? Because it sounds like for some people, like they may not want to put the time and effort in to build this whole foundation. Because to be honest, all I keep thinking is, well, then what happens to her afterwards? Like,
or him.
Or him after, right. Or him afterwards. Like then you have to be friends with them.
A lot of couples out there in that whole universe that are, it's not just couples looking for women, it's couples looking for men. It's,
right.
So,
couples looking for couples.
Couples looking for couples.
It does seem so underground.
It does.
Like, it's like, how do you know as a couple looking at another couple? Like,
I know.
There should be a symbol, like a little,
like a little button that you wear.
People wear, like,
yeah.
I'm open to,
yeah,
you know,
a mocking J on your shoulder.
it's not, again, and this is what we, circling back to what we talked about in the beginning of the podcast, which is your narrative about it versus what's actually real, what's actually true, right? So people relate to this as it's different than regular dating. And it's just not. It's the same way. How do you know if someone is
wants to
hook up with you or is attracted to you? You just kind of can
feel it.
It's a vibe. Right? It's a feeling. It's a connection. And so for anybody in the monogamous world, whether it's couples looking for couples or couples looking for women or men or whatever it is, it's all energy. People feel that energy. And then it mandates, just like Marnie, you talk about, always make your intentions known right from the beginning. Not in a creepy way, like, hey, I want to fuck you, but like, so you don't get friend zoned.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It requires an enormous amount of honesty and transparency about what your intentions are and who you are and what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And I think you find, and what we find in our own coaching practice and working with couples in this space or working with single people in this space, is that the level of transparency that that is necessary in order to be successful in this world of extracurricular relating, or however you want to label it, the level of transparency necessary mandates that people just get good at talking about what's true for them versus hiding their intentions,
right,
or being creepy about it.
Right. Are there some spaces like that are known spaces? Like, so for example, Dr. Tara was here and she said that her and her husband, like, there's these parties that they're a part of. Like, are there resources like that that you know of places to go where you can't, like, same thing with online dating apps, right? Most of the people there are single. Most of the people want to date, right? So it's like, if you want to get shoes, you go to a shoe store. Is there a space for people to go to where they could find things like that? Like, do they start looking for parties? Do they start like looking for sex groups, for swingers groups? Like, what do they start looking for?
There's a whole world out there. And it just depends on, again, how much of it you want to be, how much ish you are, how monogamous mm-hmm. you are. If there's a real emphasis on the ish, you're going to be spending a lot of time in that world. And then there are, you know, couples that every once in a while or hardly ever, but they just know that they're not fully closed. It just depends on, yeah, your appetite for it. There's so many different places to go and resources and communities and lifestyle events and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, so there are places, yeah.
Yeah, in most major cities, there are clubs. I mean, there are so many online forums. All you have to do is just Google it.
Yeah.
Really.
That's the thing. Like, that's the key. But it is funny because I always tell my mom to, like, Google stuff. I don't know what's wrong with her. She doesn't know how to Google anything. She literally knows how to Google and only look at the top three results. She doesn't realize that there's, like, a world of results afterwards. But you're right. Like, Google will tell you everything, or at least it'll lead you to the next place that will tell you more.
Yeah.
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 I do have a question, because the second half of it is just as intimidating to me as the finding the people. How does it go down? Once you've got them, what is it like? Hey, welcome. Here's my bed. You know, what is the process that you teach people to initiate it? Just give them a lot of drinks? Like,
how does it go when you go back to a guy's apartment for the first time?
Just a little chatting, a little settling in.
Exactly. So it's not different. It's just not different. And so this narrative of that it's this almost thing that's so different than one-on-one, that's part of the cultural narrative that makes people think, ooh, you know, this is really
tricky
or so different. It's just not. It's just more people involved, and it's more chemistry, and
it requires you to be really comfortable with yourself and really confident in your desires.
I think that's why I feel so awkward about it, because I'm not comfortable with myself. I mean, I am with one guy, but then I think of two people and it's like, who does what? Like, I'm such an overanalyzer and an overthinker. Like, do I start unbuttoning, like do a button on her shirt? And then
just take some mushrooms, calm down, chill out. You'll be fine.
Oh God, I did take mushrooms. It was the scariest thing you've
really?
Ever seen.
Oh, I love them.
I sobbed for 5.5 hours.
Oh, well, maybe too many mushrooms then.
No, it's just me.
Yes.
I'd have to drink. Drink yes. makes me fun.
There you go.
Okay. All right. So it's not as intimidating as we make it out to be. That's the lesson.
Anything that's foreign is intimidating, right? So like even if you, I don't even know, what have I done recently that's been kind of new, that's been a little bit scary. Like anything you do is going to be scary at first if you haven't experienced before. If your body hasn't gone through those motions of doing it. Even like I went to Sky Zone with my children. Like going into there, that was intimidating. Jumping on the first trampoline with like 1,000 kids in there. That wasn't, you just do it and you're like, oh, this is so hard. It was awful, awful. But once you get into it, it's actually not as bad.
We always like to use kids to compare to threesomes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's usually
most closely related. So it makes sense. But thank you so much, guys, for coming on and talking to us about this.
You are so welcome. Yeah. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
Our total pleasure.
I love it.
You're both wonderful. And Kristen, can I acknowledge you for a moment?
Please.
For putting yourself in this environment for 12 years. Where you regularly are uncomfortable and recognizing that it's the uncomfortability that spurs the growth in you. I think that's just gorgeous. And thank you.
I think so
Thanks
too.
Thanks for inspiring people to do that on this podcast.
Aw.
Yeah, definitely. I had to write someone an email recently because I work with guys and he's such an overthinker and he wasn't able to decide what he wanted to do. And I had to use what I've learned. And I basically said, I know it's uncomfortable. I'm there. I overthink everything. But you have to go with the discomfort, stop overthinking, and just do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this podcast has taught me a lot.
Yeah.
Just do sexual acts. Yeah. That's what it's taught me.
Yes. With everybody you meet. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh. But thank you. I appreciate
that. Yeah, that was really sweet. And I echo that, Kristen, because you have definitely grown like leaps and bounds since the beginning of this podcast. But again, thank you guys for coming on. Do you want to tell people where they can find out more information about you guys?
Yes.
And yeah, please tell them.
Yes. Come to our website, www.max-wellcoaching.com.
And that's an actual dash.
It's an actual dash. So it's max-wellcoaching.com because our last name is Maxwell. But we are going to provide you with maximum wellness.
Oh, I like this.
That's great.
I love
that. It's
a great
name.
Yeah. And what about for people who are not in relationships? Is that a space they can go to as well? Like, do you have resources for single people too?
We love Absolutely. Coaching single people. And there, people can join our newsletter. They can get our free bi-weekly coaching articles where we talk about stuff just like this.
Love it.
So, yeah. And they can even reach out and have a conversation with one of us to talk about if working together is a good fit for them.
Oh, I love
that's
that.
Where they feel compelled.
And for single people, we're working specifically on, it's different than the work that you do, Marnie, in the sense of it's not, you know, how to go and meet women and or meet men. It's what's been in the way of having the relationships that you've wanted, mm-hmm. right? Like, why haven't previous relationships been going the way that you wanted to? Or what patterns have been in place that have sabotaged love and belief systems and all that stuff? So we really help people who have struggled with finding love really find the love of their life or in, you know, loves of their life.
I love that. Exactly. Because there's no limitations, right? You got to think big always. Thank you so much, guys. New episodes of the Ask Women podcast come out every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific. Please go and subscribe to our show. Don't waste your time downloading individual episodes because that time can be used for having menage a trois. All right, guys, we will see you next week. You are amazing. We love you. Bye-bye.